It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. We're going to begin today's show by going back in time, exactly 80 years, to 1933. Then, as now, the United States of America had fallen on hard times, only instead of a recession, the country found itself in the throes of the Great Depression, brought on in part by the risky behavior of commercial banks. And so, a U.S. senator named Carter Glass and U.S. House Rep. Henry Stiegel created an act that separated investment and commercial banking activities. The act seemed to work. After all, we had nowhere near a repeat of the Great Depression until after the Glass-Steagall Act was repealed in 1999. A few years later, well, you know the rest of the story. So now, a bipartisan group of senators has introduced a new version of the law, and there is a debate about whether it will work. I'm joined now in Studio A by Michael Haley, a professor and H.J. Hines Endowed Chair of Business Management at Park Point. Michael Haley, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Well, thank you for letting me be here.
And if you have a comment or question, you can join the conversation by calling 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Our email address is essph@wesa.fm, and you can reach us on Twitter at ESSPGH and follow the conversation at #EPLive. Is bringing back the Glass-Steagall Act a good idea? What do you think should be done to prevent another Great Recession? Call us at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. So, Michael Haley, what can you tell us about how the Glass-Steagall Act came together?
Well, at the time, the banking sector was composed of commercial banks that also did investment banking activity. So they were both into speculation as well as traditional lending practice. And that speculation helped contribute to the Great Depression. And so one solution was to separate traditional lending from excessive risky trading such that banks wouldn't be threatened with their normal activities. And also this allowed the emergence of the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation to protect traditional lending, allowing savers to protect their savings with the help of the U.S. government.
The FDIC.
Correct.
So prior to 1933, you had basically you're rolling the dice with your savings. You put it in a bank, and then the Depression happens, Black Friday, 1929. These banks are using their money to invest in the stock market, to invest in different things. And when the stock market crashes, there goes the money. People go to pull their savings out of the bank and find that the doors are being slammed in their face because the banks don't have anything to give them. That seems inconceivable today, but that was the very real problem years ago, wasn't it?
Well, you had banks that were basically not acting like banks, and then we needed to insure their deposits to protect the little saver. And to give confidence back in the banking sector. But it would be inconceivable to basically allow the emergence of risky activities being subsidized by the U.S. government to protect the bank rather than the savers. So by separating banking from speculative activities, FDIC could emerge as an anchor to the system.
So you had, you know, President Roosevelt back then saying we've got to ensure that people don't lose their money like they have with this whole incident, that that there has to be a backup system, some way of ensuring that their money will be safe.
Correct.
So when this act went into place in 1933, that there was the creation of the FDIC. What other things converged to prevent the kind of collapse that we saw in the late 20s, early 30s?
Well, part of the problem was we were still learning how to use the Federal Reserve System as a banker of last resort. So it was a complex set of solutions that the Roosevelt administration put in place to print more money, to prop up the banks with more capital, to protect small savers, to create a safe haven, if you will, for traditional investment activity and separate risky trading for investment banks. And this allowed the government to promote policies that no one was too big to fail because banks were prevented from getting too big.
And so all of these things that were put in place, did they work?
I think in terms of making sure that the banking sector wouldn't be dominated by risky activity, yes. But since the removal of these protections, it's encouraged banks to diversify, to be an investment banker as well as a traditional banker, an insurance company, you name it. And that created super banks, where the top six banks in the United States control half of the banking assets of the country. And one reason we didn't have a smooth transition during the crisis is we were more concerned about protecting banks that were too big to fail to avoid slipping back into the Great Depression.
We're talking with Michael Haley, professor and H.J. Hines Endowed Chair of Business Management at Point Park University in Pittsburgh. I think earlier I said Park Point. I must have been thinking of the that strip of land in Minnesota that extends out into Lake Superior. But here in Pittsburgh, of course, Point Park. And Michael Haley is gracious enough to be with us today to talk about the Glass-Steagall Act, which was created in 1933, repealed 66 years later in 1999. Before it was repealed, were there revisions over the years? Were there things that were done to change the law and maybe have it adjust to the evolution of finance in America?
Well, there were regulations to protect investors and savers. And so efforts were made to compartmentalize the banks where one activity wouldn't affect another activity. So they set up what were called Chinese walls to isolate risk from other parts of the bank such that there wouldn't be a total collapse, a black hole, if you will, that would suck up all the reserves. And that, again, discouraged big banks from revolving. I mean, people don't understand that only 30 years ago, you had cities in this country that had one bank that was allowed to operate as one sole entity. And there were a lot of small banks throughout the country. When six banking companies now control half of the banking assets of the United States, this is not what Glass-Steagall was all about. This Glass-Steagall was an effort to encourage risk-taking to occur as a separate function with investment banks and not undermine the financial safety of the traditional lending opportunities in the United States.
So why did it not hold? Why did the provisions that were part of this act that were put in place that seemed to be working suddenly, why did it all change?
Well, there was the move towards deregulation, the start of the Reagan administration, when basically financial innovation was considered the only reason to allow banks to get bigger. And that financial innovation, they thought the more services we provided the customer would give us a better banking system. But frankly, there is no evidence of economies of scale or other advantage to banks getting big, except if they're subsidized to get big. And the system has changed where now the federal funds rate is almost zero, which undermines prudent lending practice by encouraging banks to hoard cash, to speculate in trading activities. Even though profits are up dramatically so far this year, we have a situation where loans to date are less now than they were 9 months ago. So the banks aren't lending, but they're speculating and making huge profits. So in essence, by taking away Glass-Steagall, it opened the door to these possibilities.
So jumping ahead now, 66 years later to 1999, the Glass-Steagall Act was repealed. Why?
Well, specifically, Citigroup was trying to merge with an insurance company, and Sandy Weill, who was the head of Citigroup at the time, basically wanted the law changed, and people don't understand that the largest lobbying force in the United States is the financial service sector. And it was an agenda promoted by people who believed in deregulation, that regulation for every reason was not a good idea.
And who were these people that were doing this?
The Republican Party, but also the Democratic Party. The Glass-Steagall Act was repealed during the Clinton administration.
And Bill Clinton signed it.
Right. So in essence, as I've heard it once said, that we have a government that's a Wall Street government. During the bailout in 2007, 2008, and 2009, both Democrats and Republicans on both sides of the aisle supported the bailout legislation that was to remedy the mistake of allowing banks to become as big as they wanted to. And removal of Glass-Steagall was the critical issue that allowed the acceleration of concentration of wealth and power in the banking sector.
Do you suppose that, you know, hindsight's always 20/20, but looking back, going back to 1999, was anyone aware, or did anybody bring up the idea that, you know, if we do this, if we repeal this, take this safeguard, this firewall away, that we are really running a risk here of creating a financial catastrophe, which in fact we saw some 9 years or 8 years later?
Well, it's a complex system that was unraveled, that was built up during the Great Depression, so we wouldn't have a Great Depression again. But remember that it's not simply the fact that the Glass-Steagall Act was repealed. The fact that the Federal Reserve provides cheap money that fuels the speculation, and without Glass-Steagall, commercial banks now can become speculators. And with money provided by the Federal Reserve, and we ended up paying the bill with huge taxpayer bailouts, FDIC financing the losses such that we could stabilize the situation.
Was there an idea back during the Depression? You know, we heard a lot during the Great Recession and the catastrophe that occurred, the financial collapse that occurred in 2008, that, this bank is too big to fail. This institution is too large to be allowed to let collapse. Was there any kind of thinking like that years ago? Did the government look at huge financial institutions and say that this cannot fail, and if it does, it'll create a domino effect that will destroy our economy?
Well, that's why they separated commercial banking from investment banking, because they thought those two processes were, by commingling them, they undermine the safety net, if you will, of how the system should operate. And then FDIC, if it evolved without this protection, there would be commingling of assets that were too risky, that would threaten the bank's resolve to stay in business, and we would end up being responsible for the bill.
So even with the repeal of Glass-Steagall, we still have a lot of the things that were put in place. We still have the FDIC. We still have a lot of the safeguards. So what went wrong? What were the things that the government could have done differently if they were going to repeal this law that might have prevented what eventually occurred?
Well, first of all, the explosion in derivatives. There weren't derivatives back in the 1930s. So the speculative trading vehicles that are now used as an ordinary course of business has run amok, because the fact that there are no checks and balances in terms of protecting small savers from an institution that now also serves the interests of multinational corporations that use derivatives as a way to insure against risk. But fundamentally, they're still relying on the FDIC to be the last prop to protect the small investor, and that small investor is being lost in the maze of complex trading activities that really have nothing to do with commercial lending.
It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and we are talking about the Glass-Steagall Act, created in 1933 to separate investment and commercial banking activities in the wake of the Great Depression. It was designed to prevent a repeat of the Depression or even a Great Recession. And it seemed to succeed in doing that until it was repealed in 1999. And years later, we had the resulting Great Recession of 2008. Our guest is Dr. Michael Haley. He is a professor and H.J. Hines Endowed Chair of Business Management at Point Park University in Pittsburgh. If you have a comment or a question, 412-246-2002 is the number to call. 412-246-2002. 2002. Our email address, ESSPGH at WESA.FM. And you can reach us on Twitter at ESSPGH and follow the conversation at hashtag EPLive. We're wondering if bringing back the Glass-Steagall Act, which a bipartisan group of senators is looking at doing now, is a good idea. What do you think should be done to prevent another great recession? 412-246-2002 is the number to call to get in on the conversation. So as we look ahead to what the current group of senators is trying to do, you have Elizabeth Warren, John McCain introducing a new version of the law. Why do you suppose now that that is happening? What are they seeing now that they might not have seen 13 or 14 years ago?
Well, the fact that the banks are profiting from the speculative trading activity that the reforms were supposed to reduce. And we're seeing more speculation than ever before, and bank profits are soaring based on trading activities, not normal lending. And everyone wonders why the economy's had such a slow recovery. It's partly because the fact that banks aren't lending because they're hoarding cash and speculating with that cash on derivatives and other trading activities that have nothing to do with commercial lending.
Is that part of what is creating such a bifurcation between the upper class and the lower class and eliminating what we commonly refer to as the middle class?
Well, we used to rely on banks in our neighborhood to provide us loans for mortgages. Now those mortgages are securitized and sold internationally, where lending is no longer a personal relationship between a consumer and a local banker. It's now an international activity where we become pawns in a game that doesn't seem to have reduced risk. It's just creating new risks, and Glass-Steagall coming back would at least simplify and downsize the risk that we now have.
Longtime congressman and the co-architect of the Dodd-Frank reform bill, Barney Frank, has dismissed the idea of bringing back the Glass-Steagall Act. He says that it fails to regulate derivatives trading or prevent risky loans and mortgages. Does he have a point?
Well, he's right in saying that not one element created the mess we're in. It's a complex set of elements that came into place which threaten the system. And he was involved with an attempt to reform that system, but he didn't control the derivatives. If we basically separate commercial lending from investment activity vis-a-vis the Glass-Steagall Act, a new and improved Glass-Steagall Act, we can address some of those problems that he says aren't covered by the current law that he helped pass.
So there may not be a panacea, but this is something that can help create a path toward better recovery.
Senator Warren basically says it's not a cure-all. It's a step in the right direction.
It's been an interesting conversation talking about the Glass-Steagall Act, and it may well be revived again, an act from 1933 created in the wake of the Great Depression, repealed in 1999, but the Senate is looking at bringing it back, and the question is, will it be the answer to preventing depressions and recessions in the future? We've been talking about all of this with our guest, Michael Haley, who is a professor and H.J. Hines Endowed Chair of Business Management at Point Park University in Pittsburgh. Dr. Haley, it's been a pleasure visiting with you. Thank you for sharing your insights and information.
Well, thank you.
Coming up, World Affairs Council guest speaker Ross Harrison on the importance of U.S. involvement in Syria. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.